The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
We're going to talk about some of the things that have been trending this week with Geraldine Carton, freelance journalist, and Owen McDermott, director of the Communications Clinic, managing director, in fact, I should say. Now, let's start with a story we did cover yesterday, but an awful lot of people are paying attention to it, although it doesn't have a direct Irish implication. This is the case of the London teenagers, three 15-year-old girls who ran off to join with ISIS, got married to fighters from ISIS, and one of them who now wants to come back to England. Two of her children have died. She is pregnant with another child, and yet there seems to be moves in Britain to stop her being allowed returning to the country of her birth, where she is a citizen. Geraldine Carton, what do you make of the way people are reacting to this story?
I think it's fair enough in some cases when, or in some instances when you see that she joined ISIS free, you know, in with free with her own will, and
as a 15-year-old.
Yeah, I know. There's a question of, was she groomed? Was she a victim of propaganda? But at the same time, I mean, maybe she wasn't and no one made her do it. Well, sorry, maybe someone did make her do it. But the fact that she just wants to come back with showing no, remorse at all whatsoever. You know, you read it in the article. I couldn't believe how just flippant she was about the whole situation, talking about seeing beheadings and it didn't faze her whatsoever. So I can understand people's outrage at her wanting to come back.
But you can't leave somebody stateless, can you, Owen? Thing is, she is British. Now, did she effectively renounce her citizenship when she went to ISIS? Or are you allowed off on the basis that she was 15, she was misguided, she's been through a lot, give her another chance?
I would think if we follow what we would view as Western values of rule of law, civilization, decency, you would have to say, well, if this woman has not committed a criminal act, for example, we should give her due process and there should be an openness to her coming back. I can absolutely appreciate why people would say she should rot where she is, given that she has appeared to show no remorse to the activities of ISIS. However, if you look at the person who heads up MI6 about an hour or two ago said that she has well within her rights to come back, I would follow along that line that, yes, although we mightn't like what she did or what she witnessed, if we hold those values of decency to hold, often we may not like it, but we should follow it through, and
yeah,
she should be
like,
come back.
The counter argument to that is that she showed no decency by getting involved with ISIS. Now, we had Tom Clonan on the programme recently, or last night, saying that effectively as an underage girl, she was raped. She doesn't see it like that. She also, in that piece that Geraldine referred to about the beheading, she said, well, it was fine. She had no problem with it because, as far as she was concerned, it was somebody who would have done damage to her or people like her. So it was justified.
Yeah, and I can't forever, any second, you can justify the activities of ISIS. But I think if you look at this situation where this young woman is left stateless, pregnant with a child and is hoping to come back to where she was born, I would think we should show a little bit of leniency and say she should. For people who are interested in ISIS and their activities, I could highly recommend a podcast called Caliphate, done by the New York Times, which is absolutely fascinating. But one of the more harrowing chapters of it is where the Yazidi women in particular, who were captured and then sold as sex slaves, are returned to their families. It's horrific, and it really, again, would drill home and send home the sense of what ISIS did. But I think in these circumstances, if we decide that we collectively stand for a sense of decency, you would look and say, well, bring this woman home, and if she has committed a crime, put her on trial.
Brian in Dublin says, young and stupid, but deserving of a second chance. Another story from Britain that I'm going to move to, and we covered it when it happened, the night that Prince Philip had his motoring accident. 97-year-old husband to Queen Elizabeth wrote off his Range Rover. He was unhurt, but there was women and a baby in another car who were hurt. And the Crown prosecutors in the UK have said it's not in the public interest to prosecute him for what he did. What do you make of that, Geraldine?
Well, I think it's shocking in itself that he's rocking around in a Range Rover at 96, would you say?
96 or 97.
97, yeah.
And worse than that, the very day after he crashed, he took delivery of a new one, a replacement.
Yeah.
Give Philip a break. Now, there's a couple of things. I think if you're looking at the Crown prosecution, there are three reasons why you will put somebody to bring them to court. It's going to change the person. It's going to be a retribution for the victim and society. And the third thing is, it's a protection of society. I think these guys made a call to say, well, Philip has said he's giving up his licence, so the change has already happened. The woman who was injured will be looked after through her insurance, so the victim has been looked after and society will be protected. We no longer need to be protected because this elderly man is not going to be driving. So I think let's give
you
him an
You think break. That's the reason why it happened? Would it not be perhaps more Geraldine down to the fact that
he's a royal.
The wife or yeah. he's the husband of the king or the queen of England, so therefore we're not going to go through the circus of having a prosecution which could end up with him at the age of 97 having a conviction for dangerous driving or something like that.
Absolutely, yeah.
We just stop, give him a break.
Well, the man's got style anyway, rocking around his Range Rovers.
More interestingly though, if you look at the 2017 stats on deaths on our road, not to kind of move it from a joke to a serious one, men tend to be the biggest issue. So for example, 53 of the 65 people who died on our road, 53 of them were men, so that's 79%. If you look at the pedestrians who died, 30 of them died, 23% of them were men, so that's 75%. The majority of motorcyclists are men. So most of the people who die on our roads happen to be men. Most of the people who are in fact contributing to it tend to be men, and if we look at them, they tend to be older, Prince Philip's age for example, and they tend to be younger males. So if we look at the Prince Philip as a specific example of a wider problem, men tend to be the issue on our roads.
I was going to go back to the first item. Some interesting comments coming in. Stefan says there's probably a difference between do the British want her back or is she entitled to come back, because if she is still a UK citizen she is entitled to go back and face charges. Although it is interesting to see that the British, I think, have come up with an interesting way to avoid that dilemma, in that they say that where she is in a refugee camp in Syria is too dangerous to go and rescue her from that, so they're actually doing nothing. But another listener says, if this was a 15-year-old boy, then rather than a girl, there would be no sympathy. Do you think is that possibly the case, Geraldine, that people are more sympathetic to a woman than they would be to a man?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think women are inherently more vulnerable in these situations. So I think rightly so, there'd be more sympathy for a woman. That being said, you never know what the situation is with a young guy as well. I mean, he could be just as much a victim of the propaganda and all those situations. But I mean, I don't think just the fact that she's a woman means that you shouldn't be giving her any leniency.
A listener says, what has any of this got to do with us? Well, it is the case, don't we? We have had dozens of people who have been radicalised who have left Ireland to go and fight with the caliphate.
Absolutely. And that's one of the pieces that has been mentioned around this woman, is that given that she would have been exposed to various different bomb-making techniques, for example, and other things, that there is a thinking that she could be bringing some of this skills and knowledge back with her. There is a risk, perhaps, that a version of that would happen here in Ireland. But I think if you go back to various different cases where people have been accused of things, if they are Irish citizens or if they have been British citizens, they, you know, bring them back to their home country, give them due process. If there happens to be a trial, put them on trial. And if you're a bit worried about them, put them on a watch list.
Well, listen, another listener correctly says that she said in the interview which was done with the Times newspaper and part of which we broadcast yesterday, she said Muslims and jihadi brides terrorise the local women in Syria. She has no regrets. Let her rot, says that particular person. I don't go on Instagram, Geraldine. I'm more of a Twitter person. But there's an Instagram story. I don't think so, which has turned up on Twitter. Tell us about this Instagram influencer who has come to infamy because of something she did in Toronto.
Absolutely shocking, first of all. This girl, I can't quite remember her name.
Marcella Zoy. I think that's how you pronounce her.
And she's only 19.
For God knows what reason, decided it would be a good idea to throw a chair off a balcony, just off a sky-rise balcony.
45th story up.
And just... I have no understanding as to why she did this or why she thought it was a good idea. Film the whole thing.
I'd say it's because she's a moron.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think there is an industry for idiots and morons that who are striving for profile and likes, so they are incentivized to do crazier
because
and crazier
filmed
things.
Doing it, and yeah. You can see her face, which makes her clearly identifiable. And indeed, she has been charged with endangering life. But she threw it down on top of a motorway, effectively.
Landed on the pavement right in front of the door. Very easily could have hit someone incredibly
and killed somebody immediately.
Yeah, but the objective, you see, this is the thing, whether you refer to them as influencers or whatever, their objective is to gain followers so therefore they can monetize it. And if they can achieve that, they will do it by trying to do interesting stuff or dangerous stuff or, as we're now seeing, criminal stuff. But there's tons of examples of this going wrong. For example, there was a biker called Biker or a Bikini Hiker who used to climb up mountains, take off her clothes, get into her bikini and take a photograph of her. She fell and froze to death on a mountain, I think, earlier this year. There was a Chinese daredevil who used to climb up mountains without any, or climb up buildings without any support gear on him, taking videos. He fell off it. So there's a series of these examples. examples where people are striving for likes to either, you know, for popularity or for money, and then are ultimately finding that they're going to end up in jail or worse, dead. Do you even see this thing? You know the Sandra Bullock movie Bird Box? Have you seen it where
yes.
they get blindfolded?
Oh, not to be recommended.
No, I haven't seen it, but there's all these
don't
people.
Don't bother.
She has to do a test, doesn't she, where she gets blindfolded yeah. and she has to go around. But there's loads of people who are doing this test themselves. And they're finding people in America who've crashed their cars wearing the blindfold.
Well, the idea is because you're supposed to be driving via the sat-nav, but it doesn't take into account the fact that in Bird Box...
You're rationalising this now. That's just crazy.
But actually, basically, she just drives. And without a spoiler alert, she's driving over dead bodies left on the road rather than coming into contact with other cars.
Well, these people are trying to do a version of that and crashing their cars.
How many of you are giving up the use of cash, using your cards to tap and go whenever you buy things in a local shop or in a restaurant or whatever? It seems, Owen McDermott, this is having its impact on the finances of the Catholic Church.
Yeah, well, what the Catholic Church have found, for a couple of reasons. One, there's fewer people going to Mass, so getting money through collections has decreased dramatically.
But which is probably the bigger issue.
Which is the bigger issue, yeah. And one of the other things that they have found, I would have thought direct debits or standing orders would have been a logical way to go, like the charities would. So rather than getting €2 off you one day, why not get it off you every month? They have found that that hasn't really helped get more money in. So what they have now decided is they're going to pilot contactless card machines for those of us who might go to Mass but what not carry cash.
Can you imagine that, Geraldine, sitting inside in a church and a machine literally been handed along and people taking out their cards and tapping it for presumably a pre-stated amount, unless you actually are going to be inputting your card and putting in your PIN code and your number as to how much you're actually willing yeah. to contribute?
I think it's gas. In some ways, I mean, it's great. The church is trying to move with the times. Great. But I always remember going to Mass as a child and the delight and joy I'd get when I was being given a few coins and got to add it to the basket. So I feel sorry for these modern children having to have the drudgery of just tapping with a card. It seems so much less fun and contributory.
Of course, the other thing I actually going to Mass, sometimes the amount that there's now two collections. It's not as if one is enough. That you do a collection, you say a few more phrases, not tap and go, it's pay over and then say a few more prayers and pay over again.
Well, I have to say, I haven't been to Mass in a while. So the idea of collections, I can understand that probably there is a reason, obviously, to support the local church. It reminded me of the kind of the story, I'm not sure if it's apocryphal, about Ian Paisley, who said, we're now going to have a collection, a silent collection, where, you know, he was encouraging people not to put coins in, but to put notes. There is obviously going to be a kind of a version of that happening here with the little beeps. And is it going to be €5 minimum payment? I think that's the way it is on most card machines. I think, look, you can understand why the church are attempting to get more money in. They'll find, and like any organisation, find a decent way of getting it done, particularly if many of us aren't carrying cash. But I think their dwindling numbers is the biggest
issue. Isn't it remarkable, though, how often religion is tied up to the collection of cash? Because it's not the Catholic Church on its own in relation to this. We just had Owen there, Geraldine, mention Ian Paisley in the Free Presbyterian Church, all these televangelists in the United States. It all seems to prove your devotion to your God by putting as much money in the plate for us as you possibly can.
Yeah, I mean, do you know the story of the Church of Scientology? Like, that's you only get to each level with the more you pay. I think it's 10,000 for the first level and then another 20,000.
Which is how Tom Cruise got
exactly,
to the top because he got so much money.
Yeah.
A listener says the Church of England has been contactless for a while and it works for it, apparently. Now, there was also a story from the Workplace Relations Commission this week of a dental technician who returned to work after a period of annual leave to find a hidden camera pointed at her desk. She's been awarded €5,000 in damages. Owen McDermott, I hope, as Managing Director of the Communications Clinic, you don't have cameras, do you, inside in your premises?
No, I do not. And if
not that you'll admit to.
Well, actually, if you do, you do have to admit to it. So if people go onto the citizens' information, you'll get tons of information about surveillance and work and monitoring and work. So, for example, if there's CCTV, your employer has to tell you. They have to tell you why it's there and where it is. If they are going to be doing it secretly, like what happened to this dental technician, they have to only do it for a period of time and it has to only be at the risk that a criminal thing is occurring. That was what their excuse was in this story, but they can only do it for a short period of time. So, for example, if they feel that something might happen, if it doesn't happen within a week, they have to remove it. So there are loads of, for people who are employees out there, there are tons of laws out there protecting you. For example, from the monitoring of your email to the monitoring of you by video, for example. Now, there's also tons of professions that are monitored all the time. Bus drivers, for example, have multiple cameras on them. So, but in that case, they understand that they are being monitored.
Yeah, and I suspect, Geraldine, there might be a lot of manufacturing facilities as well that there's cameras on to make sure in the event of accidents that they know what's happened. Then there's lots of places where I assume the workers are under suspicion of theft, so they're actually monitored to make sure they don't whip things.
Yeah, and I can understand that perspective, but I mean, from the perspective of the employee, if I was to sit down and notice that there was a little video camera across the way from me, I think the first word that that goes into my head is creepy. I mean, I'd just be immediately imagining something, looking around.
No, actually, because I've always insisted that there be no cameras in this studio. They are in the two adjacent studios, yeah, but that's for broadcast.
Yeah, but also you would know that they are there. And I think having them there without your knowing is a gross breakdown in trust. I think to your point on whether they're thinking that some of their staff are swiping things from the till, for instance, that's only allowed to occur for a set period of time. And then they have to take the cameras away. So it's actually very interesting on the citizens' information page about the various different types of monitoring your boss can do, from the emails to phone calls to CCTV.
And I remember being in school and there were CCTV cameras all over the school. And it felt weird. It felt like I was in a prison.
Okay, let's move on to the issue of washing your hands. Now, apparently, the biggest germaphobe in the world is President Donald Trump. You know, he's the greatest at everything, so he'd have to be the greatest germaphobe as well. But he may have an issue, apparently, with his favourite TV show, Fox and Friends, because the host, Pete Hegseth, has scandalised people by saying he hasn't washed his hands in 10 years. Geraldine, what do you make of this?
Outrageous man. I think he's a germ if he's going to be saying stuff like that. But to be honest, I imagine he's only just saying it for the salaciousness of it all and to get a bit of a...
Because it's Fox.
Exactly.
And he has tweeted since saying, look, there's some people out there who can't take a joke.
Yeah.
This was a joke. What I find kind of interesting is the amount of people who online agreed with him that said, yeah, absolutely right. If you can't see germs, they don't exist. Which I think goes to the sense and the trend that's occurring, whether it is our friend Donald Trump and his view on climate change, it's the fact that creationism gets taught in our schools. It is the fact that we're facts and science that are so accessible now and more accessible than ever are being less listened to and less understood and less believed.
Yeah, but I suppose there is the danger where you have a lot of germs get spread. And maybe there are people who think, yeah, I'm washing because I have my shower at the start of the day or whatever, who don't wash their hands as regularly as is said. I mean, you look at the hospitals and you see all the various spray things going to hospitals. How often do you see people just walking straight past them without actually using them?
Yeah, well, I think, yes, I would think that they're probably washing their hands a bit more than the assertion that this gentleman had made.
Okay, and but hang on. But yeah, but you're supposed to wash. And we've had a hand washing expert here previously talking about it actually takes 30 to 40 seconds actually showing us how it is done. And I imagine how many people actually do it the way they were taught to do as children, as diligently as they're supposed to. Geraldine?
But to be honest, I mean, people have gone through the years living happy, you know, fulfilled, healthy lives without having this, being taught this special mechanism or, you know, way to wash their hands. I think it's not really the end of the world if they don't follow that. I mean,
you're actually then veering towards that thing, is that actually a bit of germs around the place does you a bit of good.
Great for
you
the immune
system. No,
it's extremely clean places that are dangerous, apparently.
Well, I think I'm all for the 3 second rule. I mean, if it drops on the ground, 3 seconds, it's grand.
I thought it was five. You're number three. You're actually able to get onto the ground faster than I am.
It's five
so
in the Cooper
case.
Household.
Okay. Tell us, just to finish on, about a Valentine's Day offer from a major bank which has been accused of sexism.
Yeah, HSBC in Hong Kong yesterday offered discounted laptops for him and vacuum cleaners and kitchen appliances for her, which you would think was slightly a bad idea.
Fantastic
way of putting it. But what were they thinking is where I would start from, and I think illustrates a culture within an organisation. Now, they have blamed a third party, of course, saying it wasn't us. But if you look and say, well, this is something that was being offered to your employees, you should have some sense that that is a very wrong thing to do.
I'm flabbergasted that a modern company of that size and scale would think that that is all right to offer such a, oh my God, sexist differences between the two giveaways. I'm honestly, when I read this, I didn't think it was true.
And I think
this day and age.
It's interesting that if you look at this particular bank and then others, they all have these huge documents on diversity and the importance of gender diversity. And the issue that often I would see with these type of policies is they sit up on a shelf and nothing happens. And a version of, you can see that this has occurred in one of their larger offices where they're offering laptops to the fellas and the appliances to women.
I mean, someone must have seen that and given it the good go ahead.
All right. Geraldine Carter, thank you very much. And Owen McDermott from the Communications Clinic. A listener actually enlightens me as to why there's two collections in Dublin churches. The first is for the priest's wages. The second is for share for charitable work in the poorer parishes in Dublin. And upkeep of the church has collected in envelopes that in the past were delivered to every house in the parish.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.